Welcome to Latte with a Lawyer, a podcast dedicated to bringing you the stories of some of America's most successful lawyers, figuring out what makes them tick, how they creatively solve problems, and how others aspiring to be them can follow in their footsteps.
Welcome to another episode of Latte with a Lawyer. I'm your host, Jonathan Brickman, and this morning we have this from Dallas, Texas, Bennett Rowicki with the law firm Hildreth Rabin. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be here, Jonathan.
Yeah, good deal. So it's still morning, latte with a lawyer. What's your morning beverage of choice to get started?
Well, it's not coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker. So hopefully you're having a latte, or you might need to change the name of the show, at least for this episode.
There you go. What is it? How do you get started?
Yeah. I've discovered like these sparkling energy drink things. So I'm on a Celsius orange flavored kick right now.
I'm familiar with those.
Yeah.
In fact, if you go to Costco, you can buy like their version of it.
Okay.
And same deal. So yeah. One of my kids actually likes those and drinks loads of them. So I'm very familiar with the product.
Yeah.
Whatever your source of caffeine is. So I mean, I assume you need it because of you're a busy guy. Tell us about your law practice. What kind of work you do?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a partner with the cutting edge firm Hildreth Rabin, and we are mostly specialize in litigation. And we kind of have, I say cutting edge because we kind of have a unique practice where about half of us used to work for federal judges, or we worked at large law firms, and now we are doing the same sort of complex legal work at half the price.
Yep.
And that's the platform we have. And the other half, and kind of our somewhat hidden superpower, is our e-discovery practice, where we have about half of our attorneys work as discovery counsel, partnering up with other firms, usually litigation boutiques or large law firms, to handle the discovery aspect of that, because we found that a lot of the lawyers really like this fact development part.
Oh,
and so we've been able to give them a platform where they are praised for it. They become partners in our firm, and they get to focus on the discovery aspect behind the scenes, because lots of lawyers like that part of the case and don't want to be in front of courts. And we give them a platform to do that.
Oh, interesting. So you're not, I mean, are you licensing it as a service, the discovery part?
Yeah, so we team up with other law firms. So we sign engagement letters with the clients, and we handle that piece of it. Where you might have some law firm come in and handle the appeals piece of it, we come in and we handle the fact discovery piece of it. So we can do the identifying hot documents, we can do the review, we can do negotiations about discovery, motions to compel. We can even do depositions. So we often team up with other firms to do that.
Oh, I see. Okay. And you just share the fees, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. Is that normal, typical? I haven't heard other firms doing that.
No. And we've really found this niche because, like, our firm also attracts people that don't have the sharp elbows. We're team players. We like to work with other firms. And like a lot of our lawyers really like this sort of work.
Yeah.
And whereas lots of firms, it's considered like beneath some lawyers, or they might just shuttle it off to brand new associates who honestly don't have the training for it. Whereas our lawyers might have, like, we're at the big firms, we're there for 10 years, did all this work and wanted to keep doing it. And so instead of becoming partners of those firms where they need to have, you know, courtroom experience, client facing experience, we give them a platform where they can still use those amazing skills and review, you know, hundreds of documents an hour, find the needle in a haystack sort of things very quickly, because they have these skills and can just focus on that. So it's almost like a private investigator sort of thing, but for litigation and their attorneys, and get to do that as their work. And they really like it.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So you've created a role as opposed to making that part of what the lawyer would have to do on their own. So, I mean, it's a lot like a modern day sales process where you break up like all the activities into discrete roles. So, you know, if you're a salesperson, you don't have to do the prospecting. You don't have to do, I mean, you break it up into little finite roles, which is interesting that you did that in a law firm.
Right. Yeah. And And we're able to kind of pick the best people from around the country for that too, because we're a very remote firm. Even pre-COVID, we were remote, and we have some offices, but if there's a person who really wants to work with us and they live, you know, outside a big city, they can do that. Or if they really wanted to keep working in an elite place, but wanted to go home to take care of their parents or like move back to their small hometown, they can do that too.
Yeah. Okay. So you guys really are cutting edge. You weren't just saying that. Okay. That's good. Good stuff. But you're probably leveraging these big tools, I would imagine, right? I mean, people aren't doing it manually, Discover. I mean, you have all these AI platforms that accelerate the process. What do you use for that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that's another skill our firm has. So we actually, through a related company that works with our firm, we have our own document hosting ability. So we can kind of do the entire process of e-discovery. So we don't have to go to a separate vendor to host it. You don't have to pay the contract attorneys there and all of the tech people there. Like, we can do all of that for you. And and so through that, our firm has built different, I mean, they call it TAR, like technology assisted review, and other methods. And then just even our document review database, which platform is called Relativity. Have spent so much time like fine-tuning different ways of filtering and ordering the review. So that's how they're able to review, I mean, honestly, hundreds of documents an hour, especially like the less critical ones, to then focus their time. And I mean, I used to work at a very, very large law firm. I thought I was pretty good at the discovery thing, and I learned so much from them coming in.
Yeah,
and so much better at it. And so I'm a first-hand advocate for them because I've seen how good they are.
Oh, nice. What other tools do you guys leverage in the practice?
Yeah. We use SharePoint, for example, as a way to unify our firm, to keep things in one place so we can all learn from each other. A really unique way that we can all stay together as a remote firm is through our team's channels. So, like, for example, our CEO posts something every morning, just like our news for our firm, and then usually includes some fun sort of trivia question or challenge, and then so we can all respond to that, have a little nice like water cooler chat just virtually through that way. So, and then like using Teams to have video calls with people kind of keeps us connected. But
Okay, good. So let's talk more specifically about the kind of practice that you have. What kind of cases do you work on, litigate?
Yeah. So like our firm, I kind of split half and half. So half I do legally complex cases. And like my favorite one right now is I'm helping lead an antitrust class action against the three credit reporting agencies on behalf of all medical providers in the country. Because the credit reporting agencies agreed and issued a public joint press release saying they would remove unpaid medical bills from credit reports if they're under $500. Okay. So I'm getting to handle that, what looks like a multi-billion dollar case and lead that. And my firm has given me the platform to do that. And then I also teaming up with other firms on trade secret cases, on breach of contract cases, where we can handle the discovery aspects of that for them, where they, the other firms would handle the overall strategy, they would handle the briefing, they would handle the court arguments, and we can support them through that. And probably lastly, one thing I really like about my firm is our platform to kind of do the sort of business development that we are interested in and kind of find more cutting edge ways to help people. So one thing I've been doing lately that I really like, because I always like the writing part of law, is to work with other lawyers or work with clients to just be like their last eyes on something and last revisers before a brief goes to the court, just because of my experience working with lots of different courts. And really liking writing, which not all lawyers do. So I'm trying to build up that part too, that I can help with the writing part.
So you almost say, I mean, you're sort of presenting yourself more as like a legal services firm than actually the litigator. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, we can do it all, and probably like a lot of full service firms, you know, we have our different specialties.
Yeah.
And kind of like the true litigator of old, like you can take the same skills and apply them to lots of different subject matters. Whereas some firms have become so specialized, it's like my person might only do securities litigation. We kind of just have our same skills and backgrounds and can apply that to everything and kind of can help clients in any way that we want to and any way that they need. So that could be handling the entire case, could be handling a very small piece of it.
Okay. But typically, like what, you know, I mean, I know you mentioned the class actions case, but like, is there like a bread and butter like type of case that you would work on and handle?
Yeah, my main legal specialty and love is antitrust law, competition law, lawsuits related to that. I think my firm kind of covers the full gamut of commercial litigation, like really anything a business would need. And different lawyers at our firm have different, like some specialties from that, like used to work for the governments. So they might be more interested in securities law. But probably general business litigation, but not confined to one area of law.
Oh, I see. Okay. Very good. And are you on the defense side typically, or is it either side?
Either side. I mean, early in my practice at a large law firm, it was mostly defense side. And now we're probably half and half.
Okay. And all billable hours, I assume, with your clients?
Mostly, yes. All of us do some pro bono work on the side.
Yeah. Okay.
And usually that's more advising charities. Like that's a personal love of mine is to help charities. And oftentimes, like they might not even know that they would benefit from a lawyer's eye, but just, you know, to protect them, make sure they have the right policies in place, the right language and contracts.
Yeah. Got it. How many lawyers in the firm?
There's about, I think, 120 that are kind of more like W-2 workers. And then one other unique part of our firm is we are kind of a platform for people that might have worked at a large firm and then took time off for kids. Mm. So as they're coming back, they might want a more hourly arrangement, especially because we enable people to work from home. So we can scale up for different things too. So I think it's sometimes we might've had as many as 150 okay. lawyers. And we've kind of so, been,
yeah.
Sorry. We've been around for probably about 10 years.
Okay.
Probably pretty large for the last 5 years. So we're definitely still growing and seeing what this can become.
Okay. And all remote, you don't have an office that people go into.
We do our mothership is in Lincoln, Nebraska, where our two founders were from. Mike Hilgers and his wife, Heather Hilgers, are both in Lincoln, Nebraska. Mike Hilgers left our firm about 2 years ago because he's now the Attorney General of Nebraska.
Okay.
And so Heather Hilgers runs our firm along with Andrew Graben, who's in Dallas, where we also have a physical office.
Got it. But people don't. I mean, you're at home. It looks like right now, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Some of us like the office environment and go in. So people go into our Dallas office and our Nebraska office pretty frequently.
Okay. Very good. So to back up a little bit, just tell me how you got started. Like, how did you decide to become a lawyer? What's your background?
Sure. Yeah. So I came to Dallas for the liberal arts college, University of Dallas, where I got to play soccer, but also on the side, study political philosophy there. So I've always liked the law, like there, got into reading Supreme Court cases and saw that it was a very, very good way to raise a family. Like it gave me, a competitive outlet. It's interesting to fight for justice, to defend your clients. And And law, like if you love it and love the actual aspect of doing it, like oftentimes doesn't feel like work. It feels like a fun hobby. And it's also a very good way of working where it can be flexible. So I have 5 kids and it enables me to work.
5 kids, wow.
Yes, yes.
You don't look old enough to have 5 kids. Like,
yeah. Well, they're nicely compacted from 10 years old down to almost 18 months.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah. And law gives us a great way of working flexibly and making money to be able to support them.
Yeah, nice. But so you see, came to Dallas. Where are you from originally?
I was born in New Orleans, and my dad worked for Chevron, so we got to move lots of different places: Texas, California, Australia for a bit.
Oh, nice. Where did you spend most of your time growing up?
Like half Louisiana, half California.
Okay, interesting. Two very different places, right?
Yes. And now I've been here in Dallas since, for almost half my life, so I can officially claim Dallas's home too.
Okay, very good. But again, the decision, like, what did you do undergrad? What was your undergrad degree in philosophy, you said, right? How'd you decide, like, I want to be a lawyer, though? Like, how'd you make that decision?
Sure. Thinking of ways to support my family where I could have some competitive aspect to it. I think it either came down to politics or law. And in the law, you can make significant change and has some benefits over politics, where there is one judge, there's a set rules and playbook, and laws you can use, especially the Constitution that all courts have to follow, and the flexibility of it too was more attractive than politics. I mean, I've always felt an interest towards that and helping people through that. I think, like, during the kid raising years time, politics can be very difficult because it's a lot of spending nights and weekends doing that.
Yeah.
And I spent some time in Washington, D.C. during college and loved the energy there, but also knew that it would be difficult to raise a family doing that. So law really just seemed like the best option, and it's really interesting. And
so it's a practical thing. You made a practical decision, but I mean, obviously you must have been, it sounds like you like what you're doing too, right?
Yes. And in college, University of Dallas really teaches like the research and writing part and the thinking parts. That's why I've been drawn to like the legally complex cases. Like maybe some lawyers would really like the interviewing witnesses part and the fact development part. Like, I like to find ways and cases where I can kind of cut through that, so we can win a case on a motion to dismiss, or we can find a new legal argument where it kind of simplifies the case in a way. So I've still found ways to use my love of coming up with arguments in this job.
Oh, I see. So you take a more academic approach, it sounds like. Maybe.
Yeah, fair way to put it. Yes.
Yes. So you, I don't know much about University of Dallas. That's not part of the system, right? Is that a private school?
It is. Yes. Okay. A Catholic liberal arts school, probably has about 1500 students now.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And nice close knit place, Division III sports. So, which was, a perfect
mix. You play soccer. Yes. Oh, nice. What position?
Yes. And attacking defenders, like, wing back on the left side.
Nice. Mm-hmm. They have a good soccer team.
Yeah. Our years there, we never lost a home game, I think. And we made it to the national tournament our last year, like the first time in school's history that we did that. So,
yeah, very good.
Great time.
What part of Dallas is the school in?
It's in Irving. So the suburb.
It's in Irving.
Immediately west, kind of nestled into this nice hilly area, like dotted with ponds. So very, very scenic.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Excellent. Yeah, I didn't know anything about the school. So, okay, I understand. So it's a liberal arts, more of an academic school. I get it now. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because UT Dallas is part of the Texas system, right?
Yes. Yeah. And people often confuse us. So,
right.
yeah. Yeah. And they're the more tech focused school.
Yeah. I used to be in higher ed, so I know a good bit about the way these schools are structured. I didn't know anything about Dallas, but it sounds interesting. And that's a religious denomination. You said it's a Catholic?
Yes.
It's not Jesuit though, is it?
No, it gets help and support and teachers from lots of different religious orders within the Catholic, but it's not run by a particular one.
Okay, very good. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So all right, so good stuff. So you like what you're doing. Do you see yourself staying in this kind of firm and role, or maybe doing something?
Yes, very much. Okay. I love what I do now, and even if I wanted to change a focus on a particular sort of case, like our firm gives me the platform to do that. I know sometimes at larger firms, lawyers might feel cabined into one area of law, or they might feel a little bit like it's too difficult to go out and talk to clients in a particular field because they might be stepping on someone else's toes. Like our firm, because it's still growing, it has that entrepreneurial spirit. Like they really serve as a platform and help to us, not hindrance or parachute or, you know, slowing us down at all.
Yeah, no, sounds like a good place. Mm-hmm. What was I going to say? Do you get in the courtroom? Do you have to get in front of a judge or a jury ever?
Yeah, my practice focuses on the writing part. I try to win the case before it gets to that.
Okay.
But like on the antitrust class action case, I believe there'll be an argument like later this month. And then some of our lawyers specialize in the more trial aspect of it, where they're in Texas state court all the time.
Oh, I see. So you maybe could hand off a case to a trial attorney in a case you're working on. Is that?
Yeah, I would probably team up with them to make sure that we were leveraging all the different experiences. Because I mean, I've been a lawyer 12 years. I've done one trial. Like most of my cases have been won on briefing, and at the large law firm, it was multi-billion dollar antitrust cases mostly.
Yeah.
So ones that we really needed to win before it went to trial, because most clients just practically could not handle the risk there of going to a jury. And fortunately, we were able to either win those or settle them on successful terms.
Can you talk about any of those? I'm curious just to understand better what was the example of one of those antitrust cases you worked on?
Sure. At my previous firm, I did several about pharmaceutical drugs. So we would represent the brand name drug company, the company that actually innovated the product. And then oftentimes, whenever a generic was about to come on the market, there would be a lawsuit related to why the generic didn't come on the market sooner. Mm-hmm. So, for example, with the prescription eye drop Restasis, it's for dry eye disease. It was very difficult for the generics and took them years and years to get FDA approval because it's a very difficult drug to make. And if you're a generic, you have to show that you're basically the same as the brand name drug. Otherwise, you have to go through all the testing. But if you show that you're similar enough, then you can get in kind of on the coattails of the innovator's product. And so there was a lawsuit about that. And one of the issues came down to whether the generic should have received FDA approval before they did. So we got to work on the expert issues there. And that was
Who was your client in that case? So who are you working for?
It was a pharmaceutical company, Allergan.
Were they trying to prevent the generic coming into the market?
That was what the allegation was, because they had filed some letters with the FDA explaining that how their generics were not the same as their product. So they should be able to be substitutable. So a lot of the briefing expert work came into that, like, were the generics actually the same? And so some of my work was taking depositions of those experts and briefing on those issues. And it was really interesting. And one of the parts I really love about my job in antitrust law in particular is you can do so many different industries. So right now I'm doing credit reporting of medical debt. I've represented a golf company before. I've represented people in the food industry before. And just with my curious mind, I like to know about how all those different industries work and what the competitive dynamics are.
Yeah, I think there's a case, you said golf, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a case right now between TaylorMade and Costco.
Okay.
On the golf clubs. Yeah, I think I just heard about that.
Okay, I'll have to look into it.
Which is interesting, yeah. Because, mm-hmm. you know, they're it's not a drug, but they're kind of like the proxy analog for like a generic, right? Costco with their private label, you know, like they have their own Kirkland brand, but it's really like a Pro V1 golf ball.
Mm, so okay.
You're probably similar issues, maybe.
Right. And that's probably where competition law can intersect with intellectual property law, because a lot of times intellectual property gives you a right to exclude copycats of your product.
Yeah.
Because like the whole purpose of intellectual property laws is to incentivize people to be able to come up with new products. So there's often
antitrust is just, I mean, listen, the goal of free market is, right, you want to keep competition,
mm-hmm.
and not create monopolies. So that's interesting work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cool. Excellent. So so you've been at it for 12 years. So what would you say to somebody who is getting started now? What would your advice be?
Sure. I would say find an area of law that you like doing and figure out how you can keep doing that. And hopefully they find it interesting. But if some parts of it are drudgery, I think that there are different ways to reframe even the most mundane work to make it fulfilling. Like you can think about the fact that you're a lawyer, you are working for justice, even if you're one small part of a large 20 lawyer team on a case, you are helping reach justice. And also you can always, as a lawyer, try to get better with every single task you do. I mean, it might be the 50th deposition you've taken, but you can keep trying to fine tune that. And I mean, if you're just going through the motions, I'm probably like you, Jonathan, like just going through the motions on these podcasts. If you ask the same questions, which I know you don't, because I've listened to them before,
yeah.
it can become drudgery. But as a lawyer, you can always like try to be getting better with every single email you write, every single interview you do, and that helps me. That's why I'm always like switching exercises and sports and all that, just to like keep things new, to like keep pushing myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I'm not a lawyer, but, I've talked to a bunch of you guys, and I don't try to script it too much, the basic framework, but I sort of go with wherever the conversation's going.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a skill you need as a lawyer too, right? Where if everything is like so scripted out, it's like, you're going to get tripped up. You have to you got to go with the flow where the case is going, right?
Oh, definitely. And in depositions, especially, because you have your questions you think are going to be there. But sometimes a witness might just offhand mention, oh, yeah, and there was this other, situation that happened. And you might be able to dive into that, which the person didn't even think was related at all. But you're able to show that, oh, well, in that contract where you interpreted that word that way. And then, you can get all the admissions you want for your case on that other contract, and then later show, oh yeah, these two contracts are similar, right? So the same interpretation should apply here, right? And it might be something that if you were just going by your script, you would have missed.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I was, as a salesperson most of my life, I used to tell people, don't go in with a script. If you really know your business, right, you know the law, and or the business that you're in inside and out, it doesn't matter what comes up, you know how to handle it, and you know where to go with it. That's the key. Many of you guys have said the same thing. The key is to be really well prepared. Do your homework, right? Know the case inside and out, and then you're able to adjust on the fly as needed.
Right. And something I've been trying to do is get more efficient at my work. And I found that if I can kind of put new cases in a certain framework, then as new facts come in, I can more easily slot them in. Whereas if I kind of start just trying to learn everything about the case all at once, it's a fire hose and
yeah.
where to put all the water.
Got it. And you got five kids, so you got to get efficient.
Well, my office is soundproof, so you won't hear them.
So let me ask you a question with the soundproof. That's interesting. So to make it sound, you have insulation in the walls? Because the house I just moved into is like, it's like a big giant open chamber. It's like, I got to put okay. some, right? Okay. How'd you do that? How'd you soundproof?
Yeah. This service was interesting to find him. It technically is an insulation company. I think it's usually what they do, but they, he also works on music studios. So
okay.
he cut holes in the wall and yeah. sprayed crushed volcanic rock.
Really?
And fills it up and kind of deadens the sound. And then he put a new thicker door on it because then sealed the top and bottom. So sound is almost like light, the way he was saying it. Like, you leave a tiny crack on the door, I could make everything else impenetrable, but you'll still hear everything.
Interesting. I might have to talk to you about that offline. Okay. I think most builders, right? Like they don't insulate walls, right? Because it's too expensive to do that. It takes so much time, but mm-hmm. that's critical if you want to like soundproof a room, particularly in your case.
Right.
I can understand what you're going through. Okay. So, all right. Anyway, good stuff, man. I really, interesting conversation. Just to sort of round this off here, just final things you want to leave the audience about your firm and the best way to connect with you.
Yes. So you can find me on our website, hildgersgraben.com, or on LinkedIn. And I would be very happy to help anyone if they have something, whether that's a fellow lawyer or a client. And like, I and my firm really take our vocation as lawyers seriously as a service to people. And we would be happy to discuss.
Very good. Excellent. Good deal. Hopefully people will call you after this. yeah. Anyway, for everybody, again, just we're talking with Bennett Rowicki with Hildgersgraben in Dallas, Texas. And this is sponsored by EmotionTrack, which is a legal tech platform that helps litigators prepare for mediation trials with our Insights platform. Thank you, Bennett. Enjoyed it. Good work.
You too. Very good talking.
Thank you.